the nation and around the world. It's Alive with Ali Berlin. Conversations about what really matters with life-altering results. Tune in, call in, and enjoy the unexpected with host and relationship expert Ali Berlin. And now, here's Ali.
No space to rent in this town.
Good morning and welcome to Alive with Ali Berlin. I'm your host, Ali Berlin, and I'm so happy to be here with my special guest today, Susan Harrow. Susan is a media coach and marketing strategist. She is an incredibly interesting woman and has the very special combination of brilliance and authenticity and passion and spirituality and clarity that I really, really appreciate in anyone, and especially someone who centers a lot of their work around media, because I think that in our culture, we often don't experience the merger of authenticity and media. I think it's starting to happen a bit more, but Susan is definitely a pioneer. And Susan, I want to welcome you and thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you, Ali. And I think that's interesting what you just said, because it's a shame that more of the media, you know, the media and authenticity aren't holding hands. And I think, you know, when I'm sitting with my sweetie, he always calls me in if there's somebody on CNBC or CBS or any of the shows or what does he always watch? Keith Olbermann. And he'll call me in and he'll say, what do you think of this person, when he likes somebody? And we start to analyze them and say, well, why do we believe them? And why are they authentic? What are they doing? What are they saying? What's the feeling that they're giving? Why do we trust them? So it's become a sort of playful game that we have where he'll say, you know, I don't like this guy. And I'll say, why don't you? And then we'll start to look, you know, what is it that he's doing that you don't like and you don't trust, and vice versa.
It sounds pretty similar to me to how I relate with people in general in daily interactions. And whether the thought comes up about, you know, why I do or do not like them or do or do not believe them, whether it's that conscious or not, it sounds pretty similar to me as to how I connect with anybody on TV or on the radio or in person.
Well, it happens in less than 2 seconds. We all have a BS factor that we may not be conscious, but we get it in 2 seconds. And it's particularly apparent with animals. I was out on a walk today, and this woman, who I had never seen before with her dog, said, my dog was so interested in you from far away. What is it? She just couldn't wait to get to you. And I said, well, I love dogs, and I love animals, but her dog couldn't wait to get to me. And as soon as I saw her dog, I couldn't wait to get to her dog.
How interesting. I love that.
And people are the same way. So we're the same way with people. We're like, oh, I just want to be near that person. I like that person. I feel what they're about.
Exactly. And I think what you're saying, even about animals, it feels like going off topic, but it's actually not at all. You know, when we adopted our dog about a year and a half ago, I saw, and people have this with their children, I know, but Bixby is my child.
Bixby.
Oh, yeah. Isn't he so cute? He is so cute. All of the things that I thought I had worked out within myself about certain anxieties or certain fears that I had or just inhibitions, I mean, it was amazing how almost instantly they showed up in him. And the patience and the reminder to come back into my body and to calm down and to get more honest, it all showed up, and it shows up every day in my relationship with him. I mean, it's yeah. Amazing.
Well, animals are great reflectors, and so are children.
Exactly.
So they are great reflectors of because there's no barriers to what they're perceiving and
exactly.
Yeah.
As Abraham calls them, they embody source energy. They embody just pure light, pure love, and so it's so amazing. But actually, before we started the show today, you and I were just checking in, and I had said to you that I was a bit nervous, and we both were just talking about how the anticipation of something, of anything, can be where nervousness is present, and then once we get into it, often the nervousness or the anxiety can dissipate. But I wonder how that also relates with, you know, when you're witnessing, whether it's a talk show host or even a guest, and how you would work with them around managing anxiety or any other specific fears that may come up when they're preparing in media training with you or preparing for a specific outlet.
Well, the first thing is to not try to block it, to just accept it and allow it to come forth, and because it's natural. And we all experience it different ways. Some people get sweaty palms. Some people start to stutter. Or some people get weird body motions. We all reflect it in different ways. But the first thing is to just let it be, and not to try to push it away. So then what becomes available to you is to be able to take a breath and let it go, even if it's just for a moment, to be able to let it go. And if it comes back in the next moment, that's fine. You have another moment to breathe it in, accept it, and let it go. And that's really a process, and it's a process of practice, as well as that's what I look at it. It's just a daily, moment-by-moment practice. I was media training one of my clients the other day. We were reviewing a media appearance of his, and one of the things that I said to him is, because he's very high-energy, kind of ADD, you know, a typical entrepreneur, always going a million directions, and it shows up on camera. And I said, what I want you to focus on doing is when you feel all of your energy just moving really fast up to your head and you start to spin and get off topic, is just to take a breath, stop, take a breath, you know, feel yourself all the way through your feet, and even pull, you know, imagine yourself as a tree and your feet are the roots and going into the earth. And I love that image from the Dalai Lama where the roots are actually connecting to all beings on the earth. So when we're speaking, we're connecting to everybody that way. But that's a way of bringing your energy down, as well as and centering yourself so you can think, so you can let go of the fear and just be focused in the moment.
See, this is what I love about you, and this is what I love about your work, is that you can really insert anything into the space in the sentence where it says, you know, when you're on camera or in an interview. I mean, because that could be on a date or talking to your parents or relating with your child or being with yourself when you're eating a cake, and, you know, anything it is. I think that your work is so powerful because of that, because you're speaking to the beingness of a human being. You're not speaking to just what they're doing, right? That's what I hear. And I hear the coaching goes so deep that it transforms what they're doing because they're shifting how they're relating to who they are and how they're feeling.
I think that's really, and thank you for that compliment. I appreciate that. I think it's really true. And I think it comes down to the most simplest thing, which is our breath. And that may sound a little simplistic, but I do have a client who is a specialist in weight loss, people losing weight and keeping it off. And the definition of that is if they've lost anywhere from 5 to 100 pounds in 5 years or more, that's considered a success if you've kept it off for 5 years. And as I was getting familiar with his work and listening to his calls, I said, oh, my God, I said, it really comes down to breathing. I said, all of this comes down to breathing. And he said, that's right. And one of his techniques that I was already sort of using, but in a different context, was like, let's imagine you're on a diet, right? But you want a big piece of cake, and you go to the refrigerator, and the big piece of cake is looming before you woof it down. You know, you take that breath, you look at the cake, you check in with yourself and say, do I really want the cake? And why do I want the cake? You know, is it an emotional thing? Is it because I'm hungry? Am I, you know, to check in with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's valuable to do with when you're in other circumstances too. But anyway, you make a decision then in that moment either to eat the cake or not. And if you do make the decision to eat the cake, you eat it and you enjoy it and you learn from it. You don't go and punish yourself afterwards. And you don't punish yourself during.
You
enjoy every moment eating the cake. And it's the same thing in media coaching, where we're looking at, you know, what you're doing, not as a punishment, not to say I've done a bad job, but to say, what do I like that I'm doing well, that's effective, that's communicating, that's connecting? And what can I do better? And what can I shift in the moment, you know, next time? Because you don't even have to wait till your next media appearance. You can wait to the next moment and make that shift. Shift there moment by moment.
Yes. Yeah. And as you're saying that, you know, I'm thinking you must have, I know you're very selective about who you work with, which is great. And you must have a really intimate relationship with your clients like I do. I'm not a media coach. I'm a relationship coach.
Yeah.
But I'm very choosy. And I always say to them, I mean, part of the relationship that I have with them, it's the workout room for the relationships in the rest of their life. It's not separate, but everything's going to come up here. And so I imagine with you and your clients, the space for feedback and humility and willingness and this incredible vulnerability is there. And everything you're speaking to is so, it's just so important. And again, it's not separate than everything else.
No, and better to make mistakes with me than in front of 10 million people. You know,
exactly.
To try to be able to play. And when I say mistakes, I mean, I think it was Salvatore Dali said all mistakes are of a sacred nature. And I really think that's true. And I don't look at them as negative. I look at them as like, let's go into every direction we can so we can see what works. And oftentimes you have to go down the paths that aren't right to find the path that is right. And that's part of the fun of it. It's kind of like, you know, I'm almost 53. I'm going to turn 53 next month, and I've been taking up Aikido. And so I'm the dork of the class. I am the low man on the totem pole of the class. And I consider myself an athlete. I mean, it's a tennis pro and that sort of thing. So now here I am. I'm like really, I'm terribly uncoordinated, something I've never done. And every single time I'm there, it's a process of, you know, movement, of exploring different moves with different bodies, because everybody's body is different. So you can't do exactly the same thing with each person, even if you've learned a quote-unquote move. Doesn't work the same way on somebody who's got a different body. Somebody who's, you know, 5 feet tall and 100 pounds, and then I'm with a guy who's 210 pounds and 6 feet. So you can't do the same thing. The principles are the same, but you're shifting to acclimate yourself to their body. And that's an exploration. So when we work together, everything's considered an exploration. And it does get very intimate, as you said, like with your clients, Allie, because all the stuff comes up. All of our fears, all of our childhood stuff, the way they are, and all the chinks in our armor are pretty visible very quickly. And so those are the kinds of things that we work with. And oftentimes we work with the fears first to get them out of the way. Like, let's look at all the worst-case scenarios. And let's go over those first so we can deal with those and feel comfortable with those first. That's what happens with a lot of people. They want to deal with that, you know, especially if they're already scheduled. If they're already scheduled for an interview, we have to deal with the biggest fears first. We can't sort of start from ground zero. We have to sort of jump in and tackle those first and then move sort of backward to feeling, you know, comfortable in any situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I see, you know, the image I'm getting is just clearing the brush. I mean, you have to just clear everything out. I mean, as much as you can, kind of triage as fast as you can in order to gain access to them, to the message. You know,
that's right. And
attention.
I see it as polishing the stone. It's, you know, we're sort of polishing our spirit, because that's what really people see, bottom line, is they do. You know, through everything else, through your words, through your experience, through the sum of who you are. I mean, Camus says, you know, I forgot the exact phrase, but all of our actions are the sum of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all comes to bear. And I also love, if I can, did you want to say something, or should I just jump in?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was listening to the comedian Craig Ferguson, and he said about fear, he said, he's got that Irish or Scottish accent, you know. I think that sometimes fear is God's way of saying, paying attention, pay attention, this could be fun. And he said, I've learned from people who are braver than I that fear is necessary. Failure is necessary. And when I talk to people and they tell me how well they are or how well they're doing, I think they're crazy. And I think they're failing. And when I talk to people who are telling me how they feel, I'm not saying that misery is more authentic than joy. I don't mean that. He said, but sometimes that's what comes across as being more authentic. People who will really say how they feel. And I think that we I for myself, if somebody's always upbeat and happy, chipper, chipper, I'm suspicious.
Yeah.
I think something's going on. If somebody's always, you know, happy, go lucky, and nothing ever goes wrong.
Right. I think that's a really good point. And of course, there's the issue of, or the question of, some people's chosen privacy. And I know we're actually going to get into that in a bit about discernment and privacy, but I really agree with you. And in my experience and my opinion is that people really build trust with me and in certain cases credibility when they're willing to be vulnerable and genuine. And of course, it also has to do with how they relate to what their circumstances are. But I definitely agree with you because it's part of our humanity to embrace who we are, what's really happening, what we're really feeling, and especially for people who are looking for guidance in certain areas. I mean, I know that my clients in particular relate with me and connect with me when I share something personal that's great, but then when I share something personal that has been really challenging, it's like I can see the weight lift off their shoulders and say, oh my gosh, you go through that too? And I say, of course I do. So
even that's right.
When you and I were talking about our, you know, the mutual nervousness that we both feel at
yes.
times, you know, today.
Every time, still.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now I'm kind of sweating still a little bit. I have a hot heating pad that I have on my neck, but I took it off because I'm hot.
Right.
Because I'm a little nervous still.
It's a funny thing. It's a funny thing when that happens, but the show is called Alive with Ali Berlin and we're here to come alive. And I don't exclude myself or you from that, even though we're talking about the topic that you are a complete expert about. And even though I'm the host of the show, you know, I don't expect us not to feel everything because part of signing up for living your dream and living your purpose and standing for it is feeling everything that comes along with it and having the willingness to go there. So I want to remind everyone you're listening to Alive with Ali Berlin, and our special guest is Susan Harrow of PRSecrets.com. Susan is a media coach and marketing strategist. Her website is PRSecrets.com, like public relations, PRSecrets.com. We were just talking about we were just being honest about our own nervousness and humanity and relating with people when they tell the truth. And one of the things I wanted to talk about with you is the idea of vulnerability and bearing it all and using discernment when you're being interviewed or when you're writing an article or something like that. So I know you speak to people. I know you coach people. You know, you're on the ever-repeated CNBC.
Oh, my God. They just keep repeating that show.
They just keep repeating it. It's on all the time. My mom is always telling me that it's on. It's so funny. It's a great show, and you're featured really well on it, and I love seeing you on there. So I want to talk about that, about discernment, because, you know, I love telling the truth and I love connecting with people about the truth. And I know you are all about authenticity in your work. So how do you guide people in finding the balance between being totally real and then holding back what may not be appropriate to share?
It's a very personal question for each person. And everyone is different in terms of what they want to reveal and what they don't. And that's a decision that they ultimately must make and that I help them make it through the course of our conversation. I listen to the way that people speak naturally and what comes out organically. And then we start to hone that. And if they say something that's going to lead a reporter or the audience down a path that I know or I believe, or I just have an inkling that they don't want them to, I'll ask. Is this really where you want your audience and to go? And if so, why? To what purpose? So we're looking at it in the bigger context of what their goals are and what their intention is, their larger intention, the deepest intention for their audience, and then the intention of what they actually want to happen. Because every media appearance is a chance to make connections, whether it's through creating clients, customers, sales, partnerships, experiences in the world. Everything you do, say, are, and think needs to be in alignment with what you're trying to create in the world. So it stems from that first, and it stems from what people have told me is their deepest intention and their goal. And then I'll always hearken back to that. Is this in support of your goal? Is this in support of what you're wanting to do in the world in a bigger picture? Is this what you want in your personal life? What is it going to drive? What is it going to attract to you if you tell this story? So that's the context that we're looking into it in. So it's within the bigger picture, not just story by story.
I think that's so wise, and it makes so much sense. And when you were sharing that, I was thinking about how I can't help but relate everything back to just life, period, whether it's media or relationships or finances. It's just, you know, everything is so beautifully connected. And so when you were sharing that, I was thinking, it's a lot about identity. It's a lot about how we relate as being our story or not being our story, or certain things that we may think connect us with people but actually aren't always connecting us with people. And do you ever see that, or do you see a different... am I making sense, or is that...
Yeah, no, I think that we do want to tell people stories that connect us, that don't, instead of distancing. So I think it's making that connection. E.M. Forster said, only connect. And I think at the very deepest level, that's what we all want. We want to know how we're alike. And then for people who are famous, we also want to know how they're different. How are they, why are they not like us? How are they not like us? That in ways that we want to be. So that's what we're looking for. But in terms of the stories that we tell, you know, sometimes if a story is too personal, typically if I'm working with women who've been abused or things like that, and they don't want those kind of stories out there in terms of in the forefront, if that's not what they're promoting, then we talk about not bringing those topics up. Because once you brought up a topic, any topic for a reporter or a host, that topic is fair game, and they are. And if you bring it up, then you've got to be willing to go there. So it's about being deft at avoiding areas that you don't want to discuss and keeping the audience focused on what you want them to know about you, about your product, service, or cause. And that's underlying everything as well. What is it that you want your audience to know that's going to be most helpful to them, and also most true to you, without necessarily revealing things that are too personal that you'd rather people didn't know?
That's a great, great response, and that's a great segue into another topic that we're going to talk about, which is one of your, you know, where you're another champion, which is sound bites. And I would love for you to share with our audience about sound bites and how they shape pretty much everything.
They do shape everything. And I love Ruth Reichel, the restaurant critic, and she was editor at Gourmet magazine, and the great and has written a couple of really wonderful memoirs, said, I learned that the most important thing in life is a good story. So a sound bite then, and let's define what they are first. So people, you know, we all hear the term, but what are they exactly? I love that Mark Twain had a phrase, and I've used this to describe sound bites: a minimum of sound to a maximum of sense. So the very first parables, the adages, the you know, poetry, those are all sound bites. And they are everything from statistics, stories, facts, anecdotes, vignettes, one-liners. They consist of all of those things. And you're mixing them into a conversation. But at the very bottom of everything, they are stories. And there's stories that are going to attract your audience to you. And one of my other clients, who I was media coaching, by the way, he was answering questions very literally on a top national show. It's one of the top shows on TV. And I said, we had talked about stories. when he spoke to me naturally, these stories came out, and I'm like, great story. I want to capture that. That's a really great story. That's a great example of how you're giving great customer service, or that's a really wonderful example about how you created trust out of a situation that could have gone awry. And I said, and I really encourage you to tell these stories, because that's much more powerful than saying, we have great customer service. That means nothing to people. But telling a story of, you know, a woman who wrote in complaining about, I'm never going to use your service again, and, you know, because this wouldn't work, this technicality wouldn't work, and that technicality is, and then having somebody personally handle it within their company, and her saying, I will trust you forever, and I'm going to use you for all of my business. That, even, and I'm not giving the details of the story just because I want to keep his privacy, but something like that is much more potent than saying, our customer service is the most important thing to us. Which brings us back to, you know, the change in perspective, which is you always want to talk about what's most important to your audience, not what's most important to you. It's not always the same thing. And it's really important to find out what's most important for your audience to know, and then to address those needs and those desires and connect that way.
That's a great, great tip. I know that on one of your CDs or in either something I was reading or listening to.
Oh, in the Oprah Super Kit?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So just for everyone listening, Susan has just a ton of amazing, amazing products to support you in your business and under the umbrella of her media coaching, The Ultimate Guide to Getting Booked on Oprah, for those people who are writing books or writing a book proposal, Get a Six-Figure Book Advance, Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul. It's actually, I just love your language so much. But one of the things that I remember stuck out with me, because I remember telling my husband, was that a soundbite is like turning War and Peace into a haiku.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
So I couldn't remember if you said it or somebody else said it.
No, I said that because I really believe it's
so
true. Yeah.
Great. Oh, my gosh. It's just because that is what it can feel like with our businesses or our messages. And I'm sure for you, too, because you have so much content. So, you've really done it so well for yourself as well as helping all of your clients do it.
Well, I think it's the problem is not that we know too little, it's that we know too much. And it's about selecting those things that are important for your audience to know at that moment. And we're talking about different audiences, too. You know, that different audiences need to know different segments about your information. And it's just like going on a sales call. It's in a sense, because when you, and I have a background in high-tech sales, but you're going to a customer and you're trying to figure out what they need for their particular business. But it's not going to be the same thing in every business. And you want to find out first what it is that they need and their hot buttons. And it's the same exact thing for media. That's how you create a media angle. It's like, what are the hot topics now in the culture today for this particular show, for the kind of content that they provide? And then being able to create your content in such a way that it fits their needs for the moment for what they're looking for. Does that make sense?
Definitely. It definitely does. And I know something under the category of sound bites is the idea of the expandable or collapsible sound bite.
Yeah, and in today's marketplace, they're anywhere from 5 seconds to really 30 seconds is about the max you're going to get, even on radio. Public radio, NPR, you may get 45 seconds, and sometimes they go a little longer, like Terry Gross, who's a terrific interviewer on Fresh Air. She'll let people go on if they're telling, you know, a fantastic story. But it's rare. It's rare now. So really, 5 seconds, 5 to 10 seconds is national TV, and up to 30 seconds is radio. So you want to be able to tell the same story in 10 seconds that you do in 30 seconds.
It's such a cool science. Really, I mean,
oh, I like being all that it's a science.
It is in a way, because I mean, it's a total art, but there is a formula, but it's also feels like a spiritual practice to me, because it's the same thing of I saw the movie Avatar yesterday.
Oh yeah,
right? And I'm sitting there, and I don't do well when things are really loud or really a lot of intensity on the screen. It's just too much for me. So I just was sitting there, and I had to just go into a meditation. And I was thinking, this is totally separate from how amazing it was and all the wonderful messages, but I was thinking, okay, well, I'm in this theater, I'm in an IMAX theater, and there's all this going on, but there's no reason why I couldn't bring a meditation into that space, same as I could into my home when it's quiet and there's not, the big action scene going on anywhere. But it's similar in the way it's about consciousness. It's about being able to articulate that, in 30 seconds or in 60 seconds if you actually got the time, or, in 10 seconds or you probably can't do it much less than that. But it's interesting how the overlap, that's just what I always sense from what you say and from your products and your work. There's just such an overlap in terms of how we're just living our lives and then how we would appear and present ourselves as an expert or on a date or just relating, because we're being who we are. It's just a refined version.
Well, Gandhi said, my life is my message. And I really think that's true. It's the example of what you're doing. Every decision that you make and every thought that you think is ultimately contributing to who you are. So that's why that is a daily practice, too. The way that you think, as much as when I said, in the beginning that everything you do say are, I forgot to say think, but everything you do say are and think needs to be in complete alignment. So when you go out to promote your product, your service, the cause, you get the results you want and you get the kind of experiences that you want. And that is also, it's like, the saying that, and these are sound bites, by the way, this saying, and things like that, that it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. It's that kind of practice that allows you to, get to a level of proficiency and then excellence. And I think that those kind of people that I work with, everyone from CEOs to celebrity chefs to soccer moms, the people who do well and who are the most successful are the people who continue learning and continue practicing this on a daily basis. So when you're practicing your sound bites, that's something to practice on a daily basis too. One of my clients, he's really great. He's not only a real estate mogul, but he gives seminars and also has an accredited university. And he's highly skilled. I think he told me he just turned 37. And one of the things that he told me about working together with Soundbites is that, number one, he's been able to translate what he's learned with us together to his trainers, so that they're more, they speak in a more compact fashion, a more effective fashion. He's been able to translate that to his interviews, also to dictating a book. And then he's using it, of course, on sound bites and on national TV, especially when we have to time the sound bites. And I do want to tell your audience, when you're on national TV, and you have a 4-minute segment on, which are most segments are about 4 minutes. You have a maximum 1.5 to 2 minutes of those 4 minutes. The other half being taken up by the host. So your sound bites really need to be timed out to meet those specs, in a sense. So he's now able to, go from, he was used to doing like 1-hour radio shows, and now he's doing 4-minute national TV spots and being able to take what he learned and translate it to every part of his life. And to me, that's what really successful, when you can begin to integrate this practice into everything that you do and not just do it in the media. So, it's about also, being able to, like you said, move it into your relationships, move it into, your personal life. Maybe it's in a job interview, all of those sorts of things. Sound bites are completely valid and necessary.
They are. They're so cool. They're so cool. And when you were speaking, they are. I mean, they really are brilliant. I was thinking about how, when you're right, I'm working on a book right now. And
good for you.
Oh, thanks. And some of the really important parts of it are, of course, the title, the subtitle, the chapter titles, and the inside cover. And I mean, really, the chapter titles and and actually, I guess you could say the title and the subtitle, there are sound bites. So, I mean, those words, every word you use really has to be so consciously and deliberately chosen that it really holds meaning. Because I know for me, I will choose a book based on what some of those topics are. And do you agree? And are they sound bites? Because that's what it seems.
Oh, yeah, they are. I mean, that your title is your first sound bite of your book. And that's what's going to be, if for those of you writing a book, that's really what the media is looking at first. Is this a title that explains the content of your book? And, you know, did you see the movie Where the Wild Things Are? That's one of the best movies of the year. And in a scene, there were the owls I think they were on the beach, and they were asking the boy, he said, you know, ask a question and we'll help you with the answer. And they said, it's better to ask your question in just 7 words. So I thought, well, that's a sound bite. And he said, what can I do to make everyone okay? Because all the monsters were fighting, and there was great, you know, tumult. So his question to the owls was, what can I do to make everyone okay? Which is really a lovely sentiment, but it just shows you how much can be said in one sentence.
Exactly, exactly. That is so beautiful. I didn't see that, and that's really powerful. I'm also just reminded of one of my dearest friends was married this summer, and she and her husband, they're really into haiku, and their wedding vows were haiku. They wrote.
Oh, I love that. I hope you'll send those to me. I love haiku too, obviously.
It was so powerful. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm telling you. It was so powerful. And I mean, it's really, this concept really has made a big impact on me as someone who, you know, I always want to be more clear, and I always want to be able to connect on a deeper level or articulate what it is I'm really feeling or thinking, especially in writing. I tend to be able to relate better with people in person. But the idea of the haiku, or of turning War and Peace into a haiku, is just so, so amazing. So we're here on Alive with Ali Berlin. I'm so excited. I'm stumbling over my words because I'm just having a really good time with our guest, Susan Harrow. And for the last part of the hour, some more really great tips, and I'm going to ask Susan about some of her other projects that she's working on. I'm your host, Ali Berlin. My website is aliberlin.com, aliberlin.com. And our guest today is Susan Harrow. She is a media coach, a marketing strategist. She has many, many incredibly valuable and helpful products, books, audio to help people. I personally think to help people live better, but she is, as I said, a media coach. So her products are focused on Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul, The Ultimate Guide to Getting Booked on Oprah, Getting a Six-Figure Book Advance. She's a really amazing gem, actually. And this conversation has been really rich and meaningful for me, and I hope all the rest of you are enjoying it just the same. So, Susan, we were just talking about sound bites and just their power, and you mentioned Where the Wild Things Are. And I wanted to just check in at the end of the interview here to talk about just some of your other projects. I know you have a blog, and you write for The Examiner, and I know you have a blog, and you've been doing some work about body image lately. And I would just love to hear a bit about that, if you'd be open to share.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the body because it reveals us whether we want it to or not. And everything unconscious comes out in your facial expressions in your body. And that's why it's so important to practice on camera and to you know, to practice becoming at ease with yourself in any circumstances. And for me, that's really an ongoing practice in all things. Like I was telling you about Aikido, where I'm so awkward and judging myself all the time. And guess what? The second that you're judging yourself, you're out of the moment, And in Aikido, you could get your head chopped off. So, you know, so it's like, okay, you're out of the moment for 1 second, then you're dead. So it's
right.
a great practice. And that can happen to any of us, by the way. You text on a sidewalk, you know, and the next thing you're hit by a car. And that's the gruesome side of it. But what I really want to say about body is that all of our family patterns and everything that we've learned and how we feel about ourselves comes through the body, and that's why I'm so interested in it, and that's why I know that for me, it's that kind of practice in a physical way, actually going out there and physically doing stuff. So, for example, when I'm practicing somebody, they're practicing a presentation, I do it while I'm walking, while I'm moving, so it can get ingrained into my body. Because mm-hmm. when you're in motion, things happen differently. And so I find I bring my notebook, I walk outside, and I just talk it out. And then I either have a recorder or a writing pad to see how it feels, to see how it plays, to see how it sounds, and then I can revise it. So that's one way that we use body in media training. The other is, you know, getting, like we talked about a little bit before, getting control of your breath, which is the most important thing, because when we're nervous, we don't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to breathe in order to live and to move. And we tend to hold our breath. And so the practice of breathing, and that's the other thing that I taught one of my clients the other day, is that to begin to breathe more slowly and deeply before you're on a TV show. You know, five count in, hold your breath, five count out. So you can begin to slow down your autonomic nervous system. Because it's only then, Allie, that you can actually access information that's in your brain. Because when you're stressed, cortisol and other chemicals block the pathways to accessing mm-hmm. that information. So that's why it comes down also to the practice of body. And I'm particularly interested in that as women, because pretty much the thing that women say most, you know, before they're on camera is, oh my God, how am I going to not look fat?
Mm-hmm.
Or what am I going to look like? And men too. Men go like, what should I wear? Like,
right.
Okay, let's talk about what you wear. So before anybody even talks about like, what should I say? It's like, what should I wear?
Mm-hmm.
It's our first way that we're perceived through the world. And so it is through our body. It's not through our intellect how we're first perceived in the world. Getting back to what we talked about in the very beginning, how a dog, you know, they're not looking at your mind. They're looking at what you feel like to them.
Mm-hmm.
So are people.
Right.
Did I answer your question?
Somewhat. I mean, you answered a few questions for me, but I think that this, I heard something that you said that just I want to expand upon, because I think this is really what answered it for me, was that the relationship we have with our bodies, I mean, this is kind of where your work really came full circle for me in just a moment ago. The relationship we have with our bodies, so whether, you know, it's through Aikido or through your media training or in the work that you're doing with the ismybutttoobig.com, which
yep.
is just so cool. It's really great. Again, that's a soundbite, I think. It's just so clear. But you're talking about the relationship that we have with ourselves. And it's something that we really can't pretend that we feel comfortable in our bodies or that what I'm trying to say is that your message is inhibited when there is the lingering self-hatred or denial of whatever is true for us at a given time. And it makes it that much more important to clear out, you know, those beliefs or feelings or the pain that's there, or, you know, doing whatever work is necessary for forgiveness and, you know, coming into a different perspective on who we are, because it ultimately inhibits the gift that we have to offer to the world and just obviously being happy as and whole as a human being.
I think that's really true, and we talk, you know, a lot of us talk about self-acceptance, and that is not easy. I mean, for any of us, myself included. I mean, I've been 20 pounds heavier myself, too. Guess what? Most of the time when I've met people, you know, before and after, they go, oh, you look a little different. And I go, yeah, I've lost 20 pounds. And they go, oh, uh-huh. Yeah, it didn't matter to them.
Right,
right. Nobody cares about that. It's that we cared, and it's how we feel about ourselves that gets reflected out in the world. And a lot of women, this applies to a lot of women, Allie, that, you know, I've trained women in the corporate culture, too. And in one of the trainings, I remember, you know, a woman saying, she was a manager, but the guys were always asking her to go get coffee or to make coffee. And I knew exactly why, because she was a doormat.
Mm-hmm.
I would have asked her to get my coffee, too, you know? And it was partly her manner and her demeanor and how she felt about herself. And that came across instantly. She was the kind of girl you would ask to get coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And so until she shifted that in herself and began to respect herself more, her body, herself more, then she was going to continue to get the coffee question. And that, again, that's not something that happens overnight. I mean, our circumstances that make us who we are did not happen overnight. They happened over time. And so shifting
right.
these things happens over time, too. But you can change the shape of your body by changing the shape of your thoughts and the shape of your practice. And when you begin to change the shape of your body, people, and I'm not talking about dieting, I'm talking about structure, how you move, and that sort of thing, then people will begin to treat you differently.
Exactly, exactly. And as you were saying that, I was getting the sensation of the connection that happens, going back to, you know, earlier we were talking about the breath and actually being present in the body. And so through the breath, and even through, as you're saying, changing the structure, feeling the strength of your body. I mean, really feeling the strength that's there is so empowering in itself, and that can completely shift who we're willing to be in the world, who we're willing to be in an interview or on national TV or writing a column for the local paper or whatever it may be. But these are all little pockets of our humanity that really can't be separated. And, you know, I noticed that sometimes I'll think I have certain things handled, and then all of a sudden I get whacked out of the blue with whatever is not handled. And, of course, it's just my humanity showing its face in another way, and it's time for me to, you know, go deeper. But just relating back to what you do, I mean, that's why I think your philosophies and who you are as a human being is so significant as a media coach, because you're not just telling people how to look, what to say, who you think they should be or who other people want them to be. I mean, you are genuinely encouraging them to become who they are here on this earth to really become.
Oh, I love that. I love that you got that. I think that's really true. You know, that when we start really dropping into that place where we, you know, we see that we are our own original, then that's where we really start to shine. And I love, this is part of a Johnny Mercer song. I'm not going to sing it because I have a terrible voice, but it's like you've got to accentuate the positive. We've all heard this, I think. Eliminate the negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. And then his next line of that is, you've got to spread joy up to the maximum, bring blues down to the minimum. So I think that's part of the daily practice, true, too. And when I say accentuate the positive, it's not about, and he says eliminate the negative, but it's not about trying to push it away or pretending it's not there. That's the
mm-hmm.
difference. It's when you're out in the media or when you're out in your life, it's about focusing on what you want and what you want others to know and what you want to draw to you. So if you start to make a practice of keeping that your focus, then that's what will shift over time. And that's the same with your body, too. It's like find a body part, you know, that you like. For me, I've got great collarbones. You know, I've got a great neckline. You know, I don't have big boobs, you know, so, you know, I got a great, you know what I mean? Like there's some women who can really push those up And Christina Hendricks, I wrote a piece on that in the butt blog. You know, she's got fantastic breasts. You know, they're all pushed up, and she accentuates the positive. You know, work
right.
it, girlfriend. You know, she's got that, you know, up there. So you've got to work what you've got, you know. And then I read this other article, Allie, about, you know, now big butts are, you know, and people are actually paying for padding. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have to pay for padding. I've got
right,
it back
right.
there already. And the before and after, the after butt with the padding, that was my butt in the picture. I'm like, that looks like my butt with what they're trying to get with the padding. And I was very excited that now, like, my butt is finally in fashion.
Right, and that it's even an idea of fashion is so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a funny thing, but you're right. You're totally right.
I'm totally right. My butt is finally in fashion, you know? Like, woohoo!
Yeah. That's a quote to take with you into the next life.
But it's kind of also getting, you know, comfortable with that. Like, I remember, you know, I was at a meeting, at a professional meeting, and some guy was talking to me, much younger than I was, and he was talking about some issues. He was confiding in me about issues with his girlfriend. And then he was saying that he actually liked women chunkier than me, like J-Lo. And I'm thinking, that is so rude, first of all, to tell me, you know, that, because what do I care? I'm in a relationship, and he's got a girlfriend, and that's kind of rude to sort of diss me that way. And then I thought to myself, Allie, I thought, why do I care?
Right.
You know, I'm not interested in this guy. And, you know, I've got the body that I've got and the butt that I've got, and it's not big enough for him. It's too big for other people. And why should I care? And so that's what I'm working on. Why do I care? My butt is going to be the same size, and some people are going to love it. And so it's not going to be big enough for some people. It's going to be too big for others. And that's something that I've got to contend with internally and how I feel about my butt. And that is how everybody has to contend with how everybody perceives them, their personality, and their body on every level, is to start to get comfortable with who you are, both inside and out. That's both physically and who you are, who your opinions are, and how you move through the world.
Exactly, exactly. And I could not agree with you more. And it's funny, actually, I know our mutual friend, Mike Robbins, Mike and I were talking about some piece of that a few weeks ago on the show. And it was really interesting what he brought up and what I brought up. And it's always something, but it's always something that's just there to potentially distract us from being in this miraculous moment of being alive. And, but one other thing I thought of when you were talking was, learning to have a sense of humor about all of it, for me, has been the number one key to some freedom around it.
Yeah.
Because, right? I mean, it's
when you're willing
to have a less fixed perspective, and then when you're willing to have a sense of humor about it, it's a lot easier to deal with even the pain that still may be there if you're able to laugh even a little bit, even a little bit.
No, I think that's very true. And that's a great... That's a great thing to remember, too, when you're under attack, is that humor is the great diffuser. You know, it's not always appropriate, but it is oftentimes, you know, a way to disperse the energy very, very quickly.
Right.
Through humor, especially when tensions get, you know, very, very taut, whether it's international, you know, agreements and relations, or whether you're one-on-one with somebody in front of a camera.
Right. Or maybe you just... you know, flubbed a big interview because you haven't been trained by Susan Harrow, and you just just lighten up. I mean, it's just not worth it. It's just not worth doing that to yourself, you know.
No, and you just take the next opportunity. If we can always look at it as a learning opportunity. Again, it's not about judging yourself. It's about, what did I do well? What would I have shifted? And next time, what am I going to stay focused on?
Exactly. Susan, thank you so much. You are just a rich, rich woman, and I am so grateful you are out there.
Thank you, Allie,
thanks
and thank you so much
guest.
For inviting me, and I feel the same about you, and you obviously work very deeply with your clients, and they appreciate you, which is partly what we live for.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
We all do.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, everyone, I want to remind you, you've been listening to Alive with Allie Berlin here on Contact Talk Radio. My website is allieberlin.com, and my guest has been Susan Harrow. Susan's website is prsecrets.com, prsecrets.com, and she has just amazing, amazing resources, as I said earlier, for your life, for your business, and she's a media coach, and she is definitely the one to learn from. You'll learn way more than you bargained for, thank goodness. So I hope we'll see you back next week and join us again here on Alive with Ali Berlin. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Alive with your host, Ali Berlin. Sign up for your free daily email by visiting www.aliberlin.com. That's aliberlin.com. Or email info@aliberlin.com. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, where we want to know, what are you waiting for?